company this evening. I'm back with you tomorrow from 4 p.m. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, pick news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Get that now from your app store for free, or at globalplayer.com as well if you want Global Player. Coming up at 10 on LBC, Simon Marks. Right now, Ian Dale.
Thanks, Ben. I don't know if it's my age, but I'm having repeated experiences of Groundhog Day at the moment. It often involves Donald Trump, but today it's the resident doctors, formerly known as junior doctors, who are causing it. Remember when they were demanding a 35% pay rise to make up for loss of pay since 2008? Well, they got 22%, and this year they're now demanding another 29%. Now, I may not be very good at maths, but something doesn't add up there. Do you support this new pay claim and their threat of renewed industrial action? On Cross Question at 8, journalist Angela Epstein, Labour MP Chris Curtis, Naomi Smith from Best for Britain, and Reform UK's Alex Wilson. And at 9, Sadiq Khan wants to relax UK drug laws, but how far should we go?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar, but Israeli forces haven't been able to confirm his death. The Israeli Prime Minister included him on a list of the group's leaders killed in recent airstrikes on Gaza. It's believed he died when a hospital in the south of the Strip was targeted earlier this month, killing 28 people. The UN's special coordinator for the Middle East peace process, Sigrid Kaag, has been addressing the UN Security Council.
Civilians in Gaza have lost hope, Mr. President. Instead of saying goodbye, see you tomorrow, Palestinians now say, see you in heaven. Death is their companion. It's not life. It is not hope. Palestinians in Gaza deserve more than survival. They deserve a viable and vibrant future.
UK prosecutors have confirmed for the first time Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan are facing 21 criminal charges. They're accused of rape, human trafficking and prostitution against three women. The pair are still awaiting trial in Romania and have previously denied all allegations against them. Detectives investigating a crash during Liverpool's victory parade have been given more time to question a 53-year-old man. 79 people were hurt when a car was driven into a crowd on Monday. Daniel Eveson was among those who were hit.
He just ploughed into us. My partner went under the wheels and it rolled over a leg and I just bounced off to the side, but my boy got bounced totally opposite direction, about 15 feet down the road.
Seven people are still being treated in hospital. Two police officers are facing a gross misconduct hearing after being cleared of the assault of a 92-year-old man in a wheelchair. PC Stephen Smith and PC Rachel Komoto used a taser and synthetic pepper spray on Donald Burgess in East Sussex in June 2022. Care home staff called 999 after he threatened them with a table knife. And Princess Diana's brother says a farmhouse on the estate of her former family home has been burnt by vandals. Earl Spencer says no one was inside the property on the Althorp estate overnight. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 52 points at 87.26. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6. Rain clearing for most tomorrow to leave a windy day with a mixture of sunny spells and showers in the west. Warm in the south with some rain lingering in northern Scotland, highs of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good evening to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until 10. Now, do you remember 18 months, 2 years ago, literally every week, sometimes every day of every week, we'd be talking about the junior doctors' pay claim. We should say junior doctors have now been renamed resident doctors, which I think is actually probably a good thing. But their strike lasted for ages. They were wanting a 35% pay rise, which they said would take them back to 2008 levels because they'd lost out since then. Now, I remember I got into quite a ruck with them because they were saying, oh, no, we didn't say we wanted it all at once. I'm thinking, yeah, you did actually at the beginning. You changed the tune a bit of the way through. And then one of the first things that Wes Streeting did when he got into power in July last year, he gave them a 22% pay rise. 22%. Now, that didn't restore pay completely, but it went a long way to do it. And I think most of us thought, well, that all of these strikes, that will be the end of them. But they've now put in a 29% pay claim and they're balloting for strike action. Now, I think that is taking the, shall we say, Michael to be safe. I really do, because my maths aren't particularly brilliant. I got grade C at O level back in 1978, so maybe I'm missing something here. But if you claim 1 year that you're 35% down since 2008, and then you're awarded a 22% pay rise, to then come back and say you now need a 29% pay rise in order to get back to 2008 levels, there's something wrong there, isn't there? Something very wrong, I would say. Now, the government have offered them 5.8%, which is nearly double the rate of inflation. But no, they're not satisfied with that. They want 29%. Well, I say they. It's the BMA that are putting in this claim, the British Medical Association, which is effectively quite a radical trade union rather than a professional body that they try and make out that they are. Now, look, trade unions will always put in a higher claim than they think they're going to get. But 29%. I mean, nobody really thinks that they will end up with 29%. And in the end, it'll be the general public, NHS patients that suffer when inevitably they go on strike. Well, I don't think that there'll be a level of support for the resident doctors now compared to what there was before, because I was very surprised last time at the strength of feeling of the British public, who generally supported the doctors. Is that going to happen this time? 0345 6060973. Paul Gallagher joins me, health correspondent for the I newspaper. Paul, very good evening. What has led to this massive pay claim?
It's difficult to know the tactics of the leadership, really, Ian, because as you mentioned there, what brought an end to their 18 months of strikes over 23-24 was this 22% pay deal that was generously offered by Wes Streeting when Labour came in last year. And they had the latest negotiations have taken place over the last few months. And Wes Streeting was always clear, look, we understand, you know, the years of real terms pay cuts. We're going to try and meet the aims of the BMA's campaign to restore your pay to 2008 levels. We can't do it overnight, but we're giving you an extra 5.5% on average this year. Now, my understanding is Wes Streeting and ministers are pretty livid about the tactics employed by the BMA, because we're being told that privately the BMA was saying, look, if you give us an extra 5% boost this year, I think that'll be enough for us. They've been given a 5.4%, resident doctors have been given a 5.4% boost on average, and now they're urging their 50,000 members in England to strike. And the key difference here is British public opinion, because we've had a poll in the last few hours of over 4,000 British adults by YouGov, and that has found that 48% of the public are actually opposing resident doctors going on strike this time round, 39% in support. And YouGov said this marks a clear shift in opinion of public support of striking junior doctors as they were then known last summer, when the majority of Britons, 52%, said they supported it. So it's... I don't know where the BMA think this is going to achieve this time round. Clearly, they want to get to 2008 levels much quicker than the government is offering, but I just don't see how these tactics are going to work this time round.
Is the 22% award in July last year by Wes Streeting, is that actually coming back to bite him now, do you think?
I think perhaps you could look at it like that. That was spread over 2 years. I mean, that brought the strikes to an end. So you can assume that the BMA leadership are thinking, well, if we can threaten strikes again and go to the wire, bring ministers back to the negotiating table, maybe we'll get a double-digit pay rise this time round. But that's extremely unlikely. It's going to be fascinating what the results of this ballot are. I mean, you touched on it there, the BMA, compared to 10 years ago, it is a much more militant leadership now. I mean, when Jeremy Hunt was dealing with the junior doctors and they went on strike for months on end when he was Conservative Health Secretary, the BMA settled for an 8.3% rise spread over 4 years. Well, now the leadership is very different. They're pushing that much harder. And as you say, Wes Streeting perhaps set a rod for his own back last year, but I just can't see him coming back to the table this time round and offering better deal than 5.4%. And I should point out that that's better than the other 1 million NHS staff are getting. They're
absolutely
getting 3.6%, nurses, midwives, radiographers across the country. And they've said, well, look, that is slightly better than inflation. Some are reasonably accepting of it. Midwives, the Royal College of Nursing have said it's grotesque that we're being treated as second rate to junior doctors, resident doctors again. They're threatening industrial action. And it's just a bit of a mess at the minute.
I'm glad you just said that, because you've now almost given me permission there. If I make a mistake and say junior doctors rather than resident doctors, I can say, oh, well, the health correspondent of the I newspaper gets it wrong, so can I.
Not used to it just yet.
but of course, if they do go on strike again, this is going to make it much more difficult for the government to meet their targets of cutting NHS waiting times, cutting the outstanding appointments that they've been trumpeting so far. They say they've cut several hundred thousand off the waiting list. Well, that's going to go for a Burton if there's more strike action, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw the effects of the last 2 years, something like 1.4 million operations and appointments postponed, delayed, cancelled as a result of those strikes back then. The last thing anybody wants is to return to those the walkouts from resident doctors. Just at the time when NHS waiting lists have been starting to creep down finally over the last 5 or 6 months, not by any significant number, but they are starting to come down after years of going the other way. So this is, the Patients Association have come out and said, look, this will be devastating for patient care. They've referred to a potentially damaging cycle of strikes and normality. They've urged everybody to get around the table again to try and thrash it out. But I just go back to the point where I just can't see Wes Streeting moving. If they move this time round, then what's to stop them doing exactly the same thing next year when the pay review body comes back with their recommendation?
Now, interestingly, we can't persuade anybody from the BMA to come on our show tonight to talk about this, which I think it tells me an awful lot. What does it tell you?
That's quite surprising. I mean, that's the first time I've ever heard that actually happening. I mean, perhaps they've seen this poll that came out from YouGov earlier today and they realised that actually we need a bit of a negotiation of our tactics. We haven't got the public support that we did this time last year, and we might need a rethink. And that's what that says to me pretty loud and clear.
If we can't get anyone from the BMA, I'm sure there are lots of resident doctors listening to the programme at the moment. We'd love to get your views, whether you support your union's pay claim or not. Give us a call, 0345 6060973. Paul, thank you very much. That's Paul Gallagher, health correspondent for the I newspaper. Steve Bryan joins me now, former health minister and chair of the Commons Health and Social Care Committee, who now co-hosts the health-focused podcast, that's difficult to say, Prevention is the New Cure. I'm not sure that's the snappiest title for a podcast, Steve, I've ever heard, but how's it going?
You can see what we've done there, though, can't you?
I can.
Thank you, Ian. Nice to speak with you.
So, look, you were health minister for some time. You obviously, I don't know whether you were involved in any negotiations with the BMA, because I think under the Conservative government, it was always sort of franchised off to NHS England, wasn't it, rather than ministers doing it. But what do you make of this new pay claim?
Well, no, we weren't. I mean, I wasn't a workforce minister, but yeah, ministers were certainly involved in setting the mandate that was sent to the pay review body process, which maybe we'll come on to. I mean, look, I think there's a pattern of thought here, Ian, which I saw sitting on the government benches with the Labour Party and the opposition benches for so many years, which is if only we were in charge, all of this problem, insert name of problem here, would go away. And it turns out that it's more complicated than that. including public sector pay. Who knew? And yes, they did move on this, vis-a-vis your conversation with your last guest, as soon as they got into office, actually, and they gave the resident doctors, as we must call them, a big, big pay lift, which, you know, the pay progression had fallen behind, and, you know, I can see why they wanted to do that. But the clue was there. When the BMA said, it'll do as a starter for 10. So they were always going to come back for more, and that's the problem. And so I think we did this big piece of work on the Health Select Committee around the pay review body, which is the thing that looks at all the different factors across government, across the sector, and recommends to government what that pay lift should be. And actually that process hasn't been working for years. It's completely off schedule. It should work at the end of the year and then be confirmed in a spring budget. That hasn't happened for way too long, and that was very much the fault of the last government, and we're out of kilter. But also the process itself, there isn't a lot of confidence in the sector around it. So if you didn't have it, you'd have to reinvent it, but you're going to have to reinvent it in a way that's the starting point for this, where people actually buy into that process. And there's so little trust on all sides, partly because of that.
So where do you think this is going to go? Because they're balloting their members for strike action. Is it a foregone conclusion that that will be a yes vote?
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think they are aware of where public sentiment is. I was surprised that public sentiment was with them for as much as it was during the last parliament, and I wonder whether there was some politics tied up in that, you know, the end of a government, people wanting to kick the government along the way, so they sided with the doctors. But I suspect that they probably will vote for strike action, and I've seen what Wes Streeting has said, which is, look, you know, we gave you a big uplift last year, we've said we're committed to getting pay restoration back in the long term. But I think, you know, what the public are saying here, and the public are usually right, aren't they, and your listeners would reflect that, is read the room. You know, the reason why the BMA won't come on your programme tonight, Ian, is because they're not reading the room, and they know full well that the public finances are where they are, and there are so many other things in healthcare. There is a long-term workforce plan in place now, which there wasn't before. You know, there's so many things that need to be put in place around the 10-year plan the government are currently working on, all of which is going to have to be funded in order to make the system, basically, in my view, sustainable in the long term, which I don't think it is on the trajectory it is at. So asking for, you know, another, what, 5, 6, 7% on top of the 13, 14, 15% that they got last year, it isn't reading the room, it isn't reasonable. And, you know, Wes can say whatever he likes, but at the end of the day, it's Rachel Reeves that will give the thumbs up or the thumbs down. And right now, given all the demands on the Exchequer, I can't see her giving a thumbs up to even more money for the doctors.
There does need to be something done about pay, not just among resident doctors, but more widely in the public sector, because there is a drain of doctors to other countries, isn't there? And now that isn't just about pay, I don't think. I think it is also about working conditions. But then people point out, well, it's not every country where doctors get the same pension entitlements as they do in this country, and that's never mentioned in the conversation.
No, and I mean, look, the figures do show that there is some churn in terms of doctors training here and then going elsewhere, but also people coming here. So, you know, I'm not sure what the latest net figures are, but actually they do end up balancing out a lot. And I remember in the first junior doctor strike, which they were then, you know, we were told all these doctors are leaving the country, and actually, you know, we asked for the figures on the number of download forms to actually transfer your registration, and it wasn't quite as many as people said. So I think we should always be circumspect about that particular figure. But you're right, it's not all about pay. There are many, many other factors, and that's why I say that there are so many other things that need to happen within health policy and the evolution of health policy that's going on at the moment, which will make the system stronger, which will make it better for patients, who mustn't be forgotten in all of this, and that then feeds into whether they feel that the job that they are doing is worthwhile. And actually, I don't think telling them that the NHS is broken and that the system that they're working in is broken, and by implication, therefore, you know, you're working in a failing system, you're failing every day in your job, I don't think that's great for morale or retention. So there's an awful lot more to this story than what we're just seeing at the moment around pounds and pence for the resident doctors, who are not by any stretch the worst paid people in the NHS.
Indeed so. Steve Bryan's new podcast is called Prevention is the New Cure. Steve, thank you very much for joining us here on LBC. We're going to come to your calls and messages in just a moment. I'm being deluged with WhatsApp and text messages, less so with phone calls, interestingly enough, because I remember when I've covered this subject before, you just had to mention the phrase junior doctors and the whole switchboard would light up within 2 minutes. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, the fact that my switchboard hasn't lit up so far, I'm wondering how to interpret that. Maybe it's because I haven't had a resident doctor on or the BMA on where I can actually explore this and get someone's input slightly from the horse's mouth, if you see what I mean. Because I would like to understand the maths of this, because I really don't understand how you can put in a 35% pay claim, get a 22% pay rise, and then put in another 29%. I don't understand the maths of that. Am I being thick? Answers on a postcard, please. 90 minutes past seven.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Just accept we need stop and search.
Straight to the point.
This is a shocking night.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
When was the last time your party was in touch with the electorate?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit IG.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
21 minutes past seven on LBC. If you work in the public sector or the private sector, I wonder what percentage pay rise you've had this year. I would venture to suggest that I doubt whether there's a single person, unless it involves some sort of promotion, I doubt whether there's a single person listening who's had a 29% pay rise this year. When you look at the increased costs for employers with the increased national insurance contribution, it's risen to 15%. I mean, that in itself will mitigate against big pay rises, certainly in the private sector. And I just don't understand the mentality of a trade union that puts in a pay rise that is so extortionate that they know they've not got any hope of getting it. If they'd put in a 10% pay rise, even then, a lot of people would say, well, that's ridiculous when inflation is, what is it, 3.2%, is it, at the moment? I don't know what planet these people live on that they think that they're going to get a 29% pay rise in one go. Now, they're actually saying, well, we want pay restoration by 2027. Well, that's only 18 months away. I mean, I think if... I remember saying during the last time this all happened that if the government said to the BMA, right, we will restore your pay over a period of 5 years, I can't see any reason why they wouldn't have been able to agree to that. They could have negotiated maybe it down to 4 years. But I don't think people are going to have much sympathy with this particular trade union for asking for the earth. And as we heard there from Paul Gallagher, less than half the public now support the junior doctors going, sorry, the resident doctors going on strike. Because inevitably it is going to increase waiting lists. I thought it was ridiculous when I think The BMA last time said, oh, no, this will have no effect on waiting lists at all. Well, of course it will. I mean, you don't have to be Einstein to work out that if doctors aren't at work, that increases the waiting list for patients who have their operations cancelled. Terry says, couldn't agree more, Ian. I'm on the left of centre in politics and support pay restoration for the doctors and other NHS staff. However, they really shouldn't be threatening strike votes and potential action. They need to take a long view and hold Mr. Streeting to his word on restoration. If they do strike, they'll lose many of us who would normally support them, and they'll be threatening life and limb. Wrong. Totally wrong. That's Terry in Bournemouth. Here is another one. This is from Paul, who says, doctors' action is contributing to us absolutely hating the NHS more and more. Pay doctors fairly, but they must work full weeks, no half days, no sideline private practices, full-time NHS, or resign or go private, and defined contribution pensions only. To be fair, I'm not sure junior doctors are allowed to go partially private. I think that's only the consultants who are allowed to do that, but I may be wrong. No more folding to doctors' demands. They are nothing special, just another profession, says Paul in Cardiff. Well, I think they are special. I think I have always admired anybody who works in the medical professions, because I know I couldn't do it. And given the experiences that I've had with my own health over the last 3 years, I've got more than enough reason to be grateful to resident doctors and indeed consultants in the NHS. So I'm not somebody who criticises them for anything other than being lions led by donkeys, the donkeys being the British Medical Association, and not for the first time. Let's go to Arnold in Eltham. Arnold, hi.
Expert witness for the legal aid in regards to housing disrepair. I keep people out of hospitals by sorting out carbon monoxide poisoning, sorting out issues of mould and damp, and putting them through the courts. Expert witnesses have not had a pay rise since 2020. And we do a vital role in that. I do far less work than I used to in legal aid because I have to subsidise it with good-paying private money. Mm. Whereas I used to do 80 to 90% of my legal work was issues to do with housing. And the whole thing is crazy. I believe I'm one of the only chartered surveyors left doing it. I'm a fellow of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. And I'm now dealing with people who have very few qualifications, if any, who are getting things wrong because of the cutbacks. And we are the first line of defence stopping people going to hospitals over issues that shouldn't be being dealt with, and the people are treated in hospital, they come back, they get the mould again in their lungs, and they're back in hospital again. We save literally millions by our work.
And you haven't had any rise for 5 years?
No, year 2000, not 2020, year 2000.
Oh, so for 25 years?
25 years they have not raised the rate for expert witnesses.
Can I ask what it is?
So what it is, it's about £115 an hour for expert witnesses. Now, I get three times that for party ball work.
That's still quite a lot, though, isn't it?
I'm a fellow of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors.
I'm not saying you shouldn't get it. I'm not saying you shouldn't get it, Arnold, but there will be people listening who are on maybe 10, 15, 20 pounds an hour who aren't going to have a lot of sympathy for somebody who's on £115 an hour.
They may well not do, but some of the work that I was doing, I was warning about the cladding going on buildings that ended up at Grenfell and I wasn't listening to. My knowledge is far wider than those people. I deal with the electrics, I deal with the gas, I deal with a lot of other things, and it actually saves a lot of money at the end of the day. I had one client who was receiving mental health treatment for her, and her son was getting social services treatment, And it turned out that her illnesses, which they said were psychosomatic, was due to a low-level carbon monoxide poisoning from a badly installed back boiler. They've been spending a fortune on healthcare and social services. We've had people dying because we don't have the legal aid anymore. We've had children infected who've died because they're in substandard housing because of the cutbacks in legal aid. Now, I'd be quite happy for it to be 150, 180. I have had no increase whatsoever. And what happens with the legal aid cases is it's the landlords who end up paying. It doesn't actually come out of the budget at the end of the day. And what's more is I don't get paid until the job is finished. I've got accounts going back 6 years where the government has not paid me because I only get paid when the case is settled.
Well, stay listening because you're going to be interested in our next section after the news, where it's an LBC exclusive story about the parents of a baby boy who died at 15 weeks old in a mould-ridden home. They say they believe poor conditions contributed to his death. And that's exactly the kind of case that I guess Arnold would be involved in. Thank you very much indeed for your call. Now, just to clarify on what resident doctors are allowed to do, they can engage in private work while employed by the NHS, but there are regulations and considerations. They can work in independent hospitals, private clinics, or even have private practices of their own, but they must adhere to specific guidelines to avoid conflicts with their NHS responsibilities. Well, keep your calls coming. Do you support this 29% pay claim? Overwhelmingly on my text and WhatsApp messages so far, people are very sceptical. A lot of people on the left are messaging to say, look, I would normally agree with this kind of pay rise, but I can't justify it. Or can you? Is there anybody listening who can justify this? And I'm really interested to hear from resident doctors themselves. You were very vocal during the strikes last time. We'd love to hear from you on the programme over the next half an hour as well. It's 7:31 on LBC. News headlines with Amelia Cox.
Israeli forces haven't been able to confirm the death of Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar, despite Benjamin Netanyahu claiming he's been eliminated. He was included in a list of leaders killed by recent strikes on Gaza. Andrew Tate has been charged with 10 counts of rape against three women in the UK. In total, the social media influencer and his brother are facing 21 offences, which include human trafficking and actual bodily harm. They've previously denied all allegations against them. And police have been given more time to question a driver on suspicion of attempted murder over Monday's Liverpool parade collision. Seven people are still in hospital. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
Here's Alex, turning at a junction. Alex cooks a mean Jalfrezi. And here's Sue, waiting to cross the road, off to get a takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
Sue's a curry fan, but she can't cook for toffee. Alex, let's give way to Sue. Because pedestrians crossing or waiting to cross have priority at junctions, whether they can cook or not. Whoever you meet, travel like you know them.
Thanks.
Think. Follow the highway code and let's help keep everyone safe. The highway code rules in Northern Ireland may vary.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
At Morrisons, more card prices save you money on your shop. Like a 20-pack variety box of Walker's Classics All Meaty, regular price £4.85.
More card price.
£3.50. And Kenko Smooth, Rich, Decaf or Gold Indulgence Instant Coffee, regular price £7.75.
More card price.
£6. Pay less with More Card.
Morrisons to shop at Morrisons.
Majority of stores. Online varies. Excludes Morrisons Daily More Card app required. 18 plus. Kenko 195 to 200 grams. Offer ends 1st of June.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
7.33 on LBC. Would you like to know who's on Cross Question 8? Good. Chris Curtis, Labour MP for Milton Keynes North. Alex Wilson, Reform UK member of the London Assembly. Angela Epstein, journalist and broadcaster. And Naomi Smith, chief executive of the internationalist campaign group Best for Britain. So they'll be here to answer your questions. Maybe you'd like to ask about the junior doctor's pay claim, but plenty of other things in the news as well. Not least this next story. The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks after living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey have told LBC that they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. An inquest for baby Akram will take place in August. Notting Hill Genesis, the housing association which managed the property, say they are working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations. Now, a warning beforehand, listeners might find this story rather distressing. I'm joined by LBC reporter Helen Hoddenott. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Ian. Yes, at the heart of this story are two parents reeling with shock and grief. Their son, Akram, was born in November last year, but in February, at just 15 weeks old, he died. I went to see his mum, Ayat, and his dad, Abdeshafi, in northwest London, next to the block of flats where they used to live. And Ayat told me about her memories of her son.
When he was months old, he started to laugh with me. And even we used to listen music together. We had a song that we always listened to together.
Well, home for the Mohammeds, a family of five, was a one-bed flat in Hampstead. It was owned by Notting Hill Genesis, which an independent survey last year had deemed uninhabitable. The Housing Association has said they're deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. They say they're working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations and that no determination has been made by the coroner as to the cause of death. I visited the flat last month. The family has been moved into temporary accommodation, but there was mould on the walls and a smell of damp in the air. Abdeshafi, along with legal advocates, had been raising concerns about disrepair in the flat since 2023. Savas Panas from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people, had been contacting the Housing Association, claiming the condition of the flat was affecting the family's health.
Everything that I could get, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, please, please prioritise this family.
Well, Notting Hill Genesis told LBC a thorough mould wash was carried out in September last year, but 3 months later, that independent survey found mould in every room. They also found an issue with the window in the bedroom, which needed a screwdriver to open and close it. In February, Akram's mum took him to the GP with breathing problems. They were sent home, told he would probably grow out of it. The next morning, though, Akram was unresponsive. His parents rushed him to A&E, but he died despite doctors' best efforts. Ayat told me about that horrific day.
They tried to do the CPR, they tried to do those sort of things. Medical terms that I never heard about. And it was so scary. Eventually, they stopped doing what they're doing. And they said, okay, we can't do them anymore because he's dead. Your son is dead. Actually, I didn't believe them. I didn't understand. No, he'll be okay. He'll be okay. Please, can you try again?
Now, Akram's cause of death will be officially determined at the inquest, but the results of a pathology report shared with LBC by the family's solicitor show he died from late onset group B strep, which caused acute pneumonia. Experts tell us it is not caused by mould, but say poor living conditions can, in some cases, lower a baby's immune system, making them more susceptible to serious infections. And while full answers from that inquest are still pending, Akram's dad, Abdeshafi, has told us he believes the condition of their home contributed to his son's death.
The mold helped to kill my son. And the condition of the house, when it's raining, the water coming from inside. Damp, it smell strong like the air. The air is not fresh.
Well, Akram's family is now calling on the government to urgently fully implement Awab's law, which will force social landlords to address issues quickly. It's named after Awab Ishak, a Sudanese two-year-old who died in Rochdale in 2020 from breathing problems caused by extensive mold in his home. In February, the same month that Akram was born, the government actually announced a delay to fully implementing that law until 2027, though the rollout of it does start in October. It'll be a phased introduction, but in October, social landlords will at that point be forced to fix dangerous damp and mould in set time periods. Deborah Garvey, policy manager at Shelter, has told LBC they were hoping for swifter action.
We are disappointed that it's going to take so long to implement. If there are delays, then that can represent a real danger to the health and safety of tenants.
The government says Akram's case is a devastating tragedy, but that it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest. And that inquest is scheduled to take place in August.
Helen, thank you very much indeed. That's Helen Hoddenott reporting there on a very, very worrying story. Right, back to your calls on the resident doctors' pay claim. They are claiming 29% and threatening strike action. They're balloting their members. Interesting, I'll come to them in a moment. There's a few texts here from people casting doubt on whether there is an appetite for a strike at the moment. Jan says, I absolutely supported the doctors' pay claim of last year. The government, by putting Tory ideology first, forced the doctors into strike action and the cause was fair and just. I would not support strike action this time. Not because I don't think they don't deserve to be paid relevant to the importance of their work and skill levels. I absolutely do. But strike action is not necessary this time around. West Reading is on their side and recognises their worth. So they should be working with him towards a negotiated settlement and taking account of the current economic circumstances to ensure the NHS survives. But above all, that waiting lists are reduced. If doctors' strikes are to become the norm, then it's not something the country will accept, because medicine should be above that. That's Jan in Camden. Let's go to Kay in Winchester. Hello, Kay.
Hi, hello. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Not at all. What would you like to say?
So I think we will end up having to pay the doctors what they ask, because we can't have them going on strike, and because they're clearly being overworked. But I think that misses the fundamental problem, which is I think that the problems of the NHS predominantly are a demand side issue, not a supply side issue. And what I mean by that is the demand for medicine and medical services that has shot up, because basically the population is so much more unhealthy than it used to be. And until we do something about that, we're just going to have this problem over and over again. We'll pay them off, and then basically the population's health will get worse, and then there'll be more demands, and so there'll be another strike. I think until we address the fundamental problem about the deteriorating health of the British population, we're going to be stuck in this.
Thing is, it's not just the British population, is it? This is happening all over the world.
Agreed. Yes, absolutely agreed. Although, I wouldn't say all over the world. Like, if you do look in like places like the Far East, I don't think it's as bad. So if you take Japan, for instance, they spend less per capita on healthcare, but they've got 50% more older people. But their healthcare is not falling apart. And why is that? It's because the population looks after themselves much better. And so until really us, and predominantly the West, sort of solve this problem about our deteriorating health, then no amount of money will fix it. Basically, we can't borrow our way out of the ill discipline of a population. That's just going to turn into a sovereign debt crisis at some point. And I think, unfortunately, that's the way that we're going. My fear is we're going to sleepwalk into a sovereign debt crisis, because we're just having to spend more and more and more.
Because the problem is that we're spending about over £200 billion a year on health and social care. I think £220 billion on health and social care at the moment, which is around a fifth of public expenditure of the entire government.
Yeah.
And you get to the point where you think, OK, well, look, I can see the case that doctors do deserve to be paid more. Yeah, I can see the case that nurses deserve to be paid more. But in the end, it's very difficult to work out where that money can be taken from. I think most people agree we need to spend more on defence. We can't cut spending on schools. So anybody that puts in a 29% pay rise has surely got to say, well, look, we realise this is high, but we think you can fund it by doing X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, they can do that, but ultimately, if they pull, you know, if they pull the supply of, if they say that we're not going to treat people anymore, then we will have to pay them because the population is so ill. I don't think there is any solution to this apart from some sort of crisis that's going to cause, you know, the large portion of British people to say, oh, flip, we have to get better discipline. We can't rely on this anymore. We have to sort of look after ourselves better. Until that happens, I can't really see any long-term solution.
Well, it's a very depressing way to end a call, Kay, but we will end it there. Thank you very much. Check says, no other public service worker received pay restoration from previous years. We all went through years of 0% and 1%. As much as their job is important, they still get paid far more than normal public sector workers on far lower grades with far less money than those people. I've actually got the pay grades here, and this is for doctors who are on a 2016 contract. Initially, in the first year, they paid £36,616 per annum. That is, and that presumably is for a 40-hour week, but obviously there's a lot of overtime that goes on that. That is above the average wage in this country, which is around £34,000. Then it goes up to £42,000, £49,000, £61,000, and then in year six up to £70,000. Now, I'm sure there's all sorts of different things that go on in between that, but that's the kind of money we're talking about here. Now, I have absolutely no objection to any resident doctor who's done, say, 5, 6, 7 years earning £70,000. In fact, I would quite happily argue that that wasn't enough, given the length of training that they have to do, given the expense of that. But then again, we keep hearing that after 4, 5, 6 years, many are leaving for pastures and new overseas. I think there ought to be some sort of contract that tied resident doctors who've been trained in this country and partially, I don't know about partially, but sometimes wholly subsidised by the taxpayer, that they do actually need to stay within the health service for a certain length of time. I don't think that's too controversial, is it? 0345 6060973. Do you support resident doctors' pay claim of 29%? And you may want to ask about this on Cross Question from 8 o'clock. It's 7:45 on LBC.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Is it time to decriminalise the possession of cannabis? Well, a commission that's been set up by the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and chaired by a very prominent politician, thinks it probably is. The chair is Charlie, now, of course, Lord Faulkner, who's a KC, and joins me now. How am I going to get it? If it's decriminalised, how will I buy it?
Well, that's the compromise that is made. You have to buy it through criminal sources unless you've got...
how will your recommendations work, Lord Faulkner? Because I can use it for personal use, but the minute I go to someone on Blackheath High Street or Greenwich High Street, I'm breaking the law, am I not?
You're not breaking the law, but the person who's selling it to you is. The current position, Nick, is that so many people get it now so easily that it is extremely unlikely to have an impact on the actual amount that people use.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our Spend and Save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets from only £7 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Ian Dale on LBC.
7:48 on LBC. Giles says, I've not had a pay rise in 5 years working in the private sector in construction. I'm sure I'm not alone in the private sector. I object to these massive pay claims by civil servants and the NHS as the taxpayer has to pay for it and we do not get the massive benefits of the pensions they get. I do not object to the civil service and NHS asking for more remuneration. That is reasonable, but these demands are unreasonable. Sorry for two massives, but this is beyond a joke, says Giles. John says, hey Ian, what has the MP's pay done in the last decade? It certainly hasn't gone up very much. It's set independently by the Independent Parliamentary... What's it called? Independent Parliamentary Standards Authority, IPSO. And the biggest pay rise I think they've ever had in the last 10 years is about 4%, but it's generally 1% or 2%. So I'm not sure of the point you're making there, but whatever it is, I don't think it really matters. Tom says, Ian, once you have paid him the Danegeld, you never get rid of the Dane. That's from Tom. I think what he's saying there is that given that West Streeting gave them a 22% pay rise last year, then don't be surprised if they come back for more. Doctors in the UK are more highly paid than most other doctors in Europe, says this text. Is that really true? I'm not sure that is true. I suspect it's true in some countries, but I doubt whether it is in most. Simon in Aberdeen says, I think the junior doctors have to do this now. As AI advances and more medical issues can be treated using AI, input from the doctors will be, the doctors will be in a much weaker position to make claims like this. Well, I don't know enough about AI in the health service to really comment on that. Kerry says, should a pay rise not be linked to performance? And I don't see the health of our nation getting better. So if the junior doctors or the doctors or the NHS doctors are doing a great job, then surely we should see more correlation between the nation getting better. I don't feel that is going to solve stress at work for the doctors or the health of the nation. So that needs to be a better investment than money. Look, I think good performance deserves to be rewarded, but I don't think you can judge that by the general health of the nation, because we are all as individuals, at least in part, responsible for the for our own health, aren't we? Or we should be. Basil in Romford says, employers' contribution to junior doctors' pay is 23.7% of their pay. Average contribution in the private sector is 4.5%. It's quite simple. Reduce NHS employees' pension costs by 20% and add it to their pay. They will then have a choice whether to spend the money or invest it. Can you imagine the industrial action if the government said, well, we're going to reduce your pension contribution from 23.7% to 3.7%? I mean, there is a point there, because it is true that public sector pensions, certainly in local government, certainly in education and certainly in the NHS, are becoming unaffordable. But that's a debate that no politician really is going to have, for obvious reasons. Gareth, a nurse in Essex, says, nurse prescriber here, you'll find that a lot of resident doctors think the BMA have overplayed their hand. Perhaps biased, but NHS non-medical staff wages need more attention. That's where the majority of the work takes place. Jamie says, aren't these the people who have also been trained at a massively subsidised rate? And Roy says the doctors already had a 22% pay rise. I supported their action last time, but this time it looks like greed. They're holding the country to ransom. It is the taxpayers that pay their wages. We can't afford their demands. I'm reading these out in the order that they've come in. Honestly, I'm very, very surprised at the number of people who are saying, no, 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 we can't support this. Because I haven't actually seen anyone saying, yes, we should support this, which is totally different to how it was last time. Helen says, doctors are the most highly paid cohort in the NHS, and they demand massive pay rises disguised as pay restoration. Pay increases should go to the much worse off NHS workers, such as carers. They earn a pittance. Nick says, I haven't had 29% in 10 years, let alone in 1 year. The average pay is 3%. I work in the private sector and very hard long hours, and I wouldn't have expected my employer to give me that type of increase, probably not even for changing a job. And somebody will finish off with this. Somebody saying, bit rich for you, Ian, to sit there and adjudicate on how much others deserve to earn. How much do they pay you to blather on again, Ian? Well, the difference between me and the NHS is that I work in the private sector and my pay is between me and my employer. And frankly, Ian, it's got nothing to do with you. Whereas I think public sector pay does have something to do with all of us because we are the ones that are paying it. Now, before we come to tonight's cross question, let's hear a little of the latest episode of the Ian Dell All Talk podcast. My guest this week is the businesswoman and political consultant Deborah Mattinson, who was Keir Starmer's director of strategy in the lead up to last year's election and is now a Labour peer. And I asked about the tougher days in her previous job and what made them difficult.
Just the sheer slog, really. It's just, and sometimes when you're in opposition, opposition is frustrating, you know. I mean, I remember once Keir coming back into Lotto, the leader of the opposition's office, after, I think it was a Queen's speech then, and just so frustrated. And, you know, he said, these experiences are the worst days of my life because I'm so helpless. There's nothing I can do. All I can do is respond to what they're doing, and that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to do things myself. You know, opposition is frustrating. It's tiresome.
You said you knew him a bit before all of this. When you finished working for him, what did you found out about him that you really admired or maybe didn't like?
He is so tough.
He's ruthless, isn't he?
His ruthless is actually the right word. Mm. He is absolutely tough and focused and very, very, very resilient as well. Incredibly resilient. I mean, obviously politicians have to be, but I think he takes it to another level. I think his ability to relax, when you think, gosh, if that was me, I wouldn't be able to sleep. If that was, you know, he seems to be able to sort of compartmentalize things in his life in a really effective way. And he's a really nice man. I mean, he's unlike any politician I've ever worked with. Honestly, ever. He's got proper friends who are not in any way transactional. They're nothing to do with politics. They are just people that he enjoys being with and having a beer with and watching football with. And it's all about football, family, and his friends.
That comes from the fact that he didn't get into politics until 2015, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, so properly a hinterland. His life was his hinterland.
I mean, slightly veering off the subject here, but I mean, I always say I've been involved in politics and the media for, I don't know, 30 years now, 25 years. I could count on the fingers of one hand the number of proper friends that I've made in politics and the media. I've got lots of friends in inverted commas.
Yeah, kind of acquaintances, people you hang out with.
What you think of as real friends, whereas I suspect, because, okay, he was in public life before, but not in politics directly, I suspect that's an advantage to him because he's been able to build up that almost support network.
Yes, exactly. And you know, and he's got best friends who are nothing to do with politics, you know, two or three, and he will ring them and he'll ask them. I remember being at a drinks thing in Downing Street not long after winning, you know, he won the election, and bumping into one of his friends. He was very anxious because he'd arrived with some beers in a Tesco's bag.
and the bag had been taken off him, and he was like, I don't know where they put my bag, because I would have a drink with on my own with Keir later, and I bought these beers.
And I mean, what he must have, you must have seen something you didn't like about him. I mean, I'm told he can be a little bit temperamental.
I genuinely did not find him to be so, actually. No. I mean, compared with, you know, the fabled stories of phones being thrown at people, which, by the way, also, as far as I'm aware, never happened. But no, I find him quite sort of equable, actually. He's impatient. I think he's quite an impatient, you know, he wants to get things done. He gets frustrated. I mean, he is somebody who's very pragmatic, very driven by results, so can get impatient if things take longer than he wants. But he also is very thorough, so it's that balance. You know, he wants all the evidence. He trained as a lawyer. If you're trying to persuade him to do something, you better back it up with decent evidence.
Was it a mistake to bring in Sue Gray?
Well, I mean, it clearly didn't work that well, but I
thought it was a masterstroke. I mean,
I did at the time too, and I think she's very nice, and obviously she's now in one of your colleagues with me. But she's, I obviously wasn't there for that early period of government. You know, I'd taken a decision when I took the job that I saw my role as getting him over the line if I possibly could, and then backing off, and that's exactly what I did. So I honestly can't comment on what happened there. It clearly didn't work very well, and clearly he took a decision that looks like the right decision, because things seem much better.
That's the pollster and political consultant, now Labour peer, Deborah Mattinson. And you can hear our full conversation by subscribing to the Ian Dale All Talk podcast on Global Player. Now, coming up in a moment, it's Wednesday's edition of Cross Question. We have with us Chris Curtis, the Labour MP for Milton Keynes North, Alex Wilson, Reform UK member of the London Assembly, Angela Epstein, journalist and broadcaster, and Naomi Smith, chief executive of Internationalist Campaign Group Best for Britain. So they're here to answer your questions. Could be on anything to do with today's news. We like the oddball question as well. There's a challenge for you. 0345 6060 973. That's the number to call or send a WhatsApp message, or you can text 84850, and you can watch us on Global Player.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Benjamin Netanyahu's claimed Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohamed Sinwar. It's believed he was targeted during a strike.